Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Friday, November 18th. Today, Sun writer Kevin Simpson sits down with legendary music writer and historian G. Brown to talk about Colorado performers and memorable performances at the state's iconic venues. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Vine Deloria Jr. was one of the most prominent voices among American Indians in the 20th century. In Custer Died for Your Sins, an Indian manifesto published at the height of the civil rights movement in 1969, he wrote, quote, "One of the finest things about being an Indian is that people are always interested in you and your plight. Other groups have difficulties, predicaments, quandaries, problems, or troubles. Traditionally, we Indians have had a plight." Born in South Dakota in 1933, Deloria hailed from the Sioux culture that once dominated the northern Great Plains. He served in the U.S. Marines and earned degrees from several colleges, including the University of Colorado's Law School. After teaching for a dozen years in Arizona, he returned to Boulder in 1990 for a decade-long stint on the faculty of his alma mater. There, in the words of one colleague, quote, "Deloria fostered his reputation as a great leader and writer, probably the most influential American Indian of the past century." American Indians, like many groups in the 1960s, spoke out against generations of mistreatment. Deloria offered native cultures in the United States a philosophy of resistance presented in engaged, sarcastic, brilliant prose. He ridiculed the federal government as inept and arrogant in its dealings with American Indians, bemoaned the intrusions of scholars and missionaries, and contrasted the Cold War promotion of American values against historical treatment of distinct cultures within the country's boundaries. Deloria quipped that, quote, "practically the only thing the white men ever gave the Indian was disease and poverty." He also praised American Indians' hard-earned sense of humor, especially aimed at the perennial butt of jokes, George A. Custer. On this day in 2005, 5 days after his death at age 72, a memorial service for Deloria took place in Golden. Friends and admirers gathered to celebrate a man who reinvigorated American Indians, infusing hope through his sharp mind and even sharper tongue. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to attend Closing the Gap, a conversation with Colorado's Black community about home ownership. Join the virtual discussion to hear from expert panels about getting the Black community to a place where they have better access to home ownership. The event is free and will be streamed and recorded on December 1st from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. Learn more at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Hey there, Colorado, and hello, G. Happy Friday.
How are you, Kevin?
Good. Say, that last month we talked about the 15th anniversary of the death of John Denver and how he impacted Colorado's musical identity, but also could be kind of a polarizing figure. And now we just recently lost another remarkable performer and polarizing, but in a different way, in Jerry Lee Lewis. You did just a terrific blog post on the Colorado Music Experience website about his significance as a pioneer of rock and roll. So tell us a little bit about his legacy and why people have had such strong opinions about him, both for better and worse.
Well, Jerry Lee was one of those early pioneers, like Little Richard, like all of them, really. Elvis got all the heat for swiveling his hips, right? But like Little Richard, all the boxes he ticked in terms of aggravating the Eisenhower era establishment, right? Jerry Lee Lewis, kind of the same thing in terms of, for lack of a better term, the crazy redneck, right? And the 50s from the South, kind of a bully, and I'm sure his views on race relations weren't very evolved, but fabulously talented, right? Had that incredible performing style, just the things that drove parents at the time crazy. It seems quaint now, but it was seismic back in the late 50s. And Jerry Lee sprung on the scene and had great hits, great balls of fire, whole lot of shaking going on, and then suffered one of the hugest scandals of his time. He married his 13-year-old cousin. And I always thought It's not that you condone that, but Jerry Lee's response was always, well, at least I married her. That was kind of a valid point, you know. He was only doing what he thought was the right thing. So anyway, it destroyed him. He had to build his career back playing bars and honky-tonks. He ended up having a second career as a country singer, had a nice string of hits, and then continued to perform as long as he was physically able. His following never went away. But an interesting career arc, to your point, Kevin.
So you wrote about his appearance somewhat later in his career, I guess, at the Grizzly Rose in Denver. You were there and captured some funny and even poignant moments from that performance. So take us back to that local appearance of a living legend. What was that like?
It was a snowy Thursday night in December, and the Grizzly Rose was packed for Jerry Lee. And he was 62 at the time, towards the end of his performing days. The one thing he told me that resonated, a hint of sadness in his voice, where he was thrilled to be out on the road, still playing for his fans, but he just couldn't do it as much as he used to. Three nights a week was really taxing him. So just the physical elements, but still ornery as ever. He was wearing a cable knit sweater and polyester slacks, so anything but a aging country gentleman, but still kicked the piano stool over when he finished his set, still sang and played great. And to hear the crowd, their love for him, you know, keep rocking Jerry Lee. So Jerry Lee really appreciated that, but just kind of a kindly old man at that point.
All right. Do we have a clip of Jerry Lee Lewis? Great Balls of Fire, of course we do, but not that one. So tell us what we're going to hear, G.
Well, Lewis Boogie, it's just in the great tradition of self-referencing rock songs. People do it at various points in musical history, songs about themselves. This was kind of, it's a bit of a rarity. It wasn't released as a single in its time in the late 50s, but kind of Jerry Lee's introduction to his style.
Okay, here we go.
A boogie woogie makes you wanna stop and do the bop. It's called a Lewis boogie in a Lewis way. Oh, I do my little boogie woogie every day. Oh,
boy. Okay, let's fast forward now to the 1990s, musically speaking, and to just a few weeks ago as well, when you took in the Denver Nuggets home opener this season. You reunited with a couple of Denver originals at that game, two gentlemen named Steve Gibson and Cecil Glenn, although our listeners probably know them both individually and collectively by other names. So tell us about the reunion and these guys' place in Denver's music history.
Well, we're talking about Tag Team. Whoop, there it is. They're big in the 90s that still gets played. Those guys, that's a career resurgent in recent years with the Geico commercial, where they changed it to Scoop, there it is, the ice cream sprinkles episode. And Cecil Glenn, known as DC, the Brain Supreme, and Steve Gibson, Steve Roland, were Manual High graduates, class of 1984. They moved to Atlanta when the hip-hop scene in Denver hadn't evolved fast enough for them, played the clubs down there, came up with that song, and the rest is hysteria, as we like to say. But it's great that Nuggets recruited them to do the halftime show at the home opener, and I was just very privileged and lucky to be invited with friends and family to celebrate their homecoming.
So I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but I missed their hit the first time around. But I did see them on the Geico commercials you referenced, and I can totally get why that song became such a hit. And actually, as I started researching this for more on that song's backstory, my friend and former colleague at the Denver Post, Robert Sanchez, did a terrific piece on Tag Team 9 years ago in 5280 magazine that's definitely worth Googling. A lot of great background. So because it's Friday and we've got the beat, let's play a little bit of their signature hit. Like this.
again. Check it, direct it, let's begin. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, jump, rejoices. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. These three words mean you're getting busy. Whoop, that is Hitman.
All right. Gee, you've covered the music scene for a long time, and I've seen the incredible archive you have in your home of all the press kits and interviews spanning generations. Let's talk for a minute about a labor of love that you've been working on for years now, the On Record series of books that chronicled year by year popular music history, not just in Colorado, but nationally. You've got a few volumes out and some exciting news about these books. So tell us how this got started and where you're going with it, because there are obviously a lot of years to cover.
Yeah, it's a little ambitious. I'll cut to that. On Record is a series. It's kind of an encyclopedia, if you will, year by year from 1978 to 1998. That arc is kind of from the biggest years of the music industry, the recording industry. 1978 is when we had the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, Rumors by Fleetwood Mac, albums that sold tens of millions of copies. And then over the course of 20 years, we get up to where Napster was introduced in the late 90s and everything went digital. And all of the hard goods, CDs and vinyl, kind of went binary. And all the photos that I had archived went to JPEGs. So to track that two-decade period just felt like a responsibility. These books are so beautifully designed. I can't take any credit for that. I've got the best book team in the world. But the response has been fantastic. Year by year, I'm fiercely proud that it's not first-person bloviating, you know, my memoirs. It's not essays on what it all meant. It's reportage. It's what we do, Kevin. It's the act talking about that album in that year. And the photos from my archives, 50 banker's boxes worth that I draw from, all the interviews I did over the years, over 3,000 at last count. So I'm just fiercely proud of it, and people really love it. And if you want to know more, the best place to go right now is colomusic.org, colomusic.org. That's the Colorado Music Experiences website, and you can access information about the books that way. We did sign a deal this month with Publishers Group West, which is the biggest independent book distributing company in America. So we're bad. We're nationwide, if not international now. So happy to share that.
And yeah, these books really are amazing. I've already sent a set to my brother, the rock and roll musician, but anyone can get absolutely lost in the fascinating detail and the breadth that they cover. So as we mentioned last month, the Colorado Music Experience has been able to make available to the public some great performances at local venues, places like the Rainbow Music Hall, which now I think is a drugstore out on Evans Avenue.
It was a Walgreens, but I don't even think it's that anymore.
Oh, maybe not. Times change. And Evans Field, and holy cow, some of the names that are represented in this archive: John Prine, Jerry Jeff Walker, Maria Muldaur, U2, Joan Arbitrating, on and on and on. It's an amazing collection that you can play right there on the website. And gee, I think you've selected a clip from a Roger McGuinn show at Ebbets Field. A really interesting song that describes a close encounter. And it's a song, too, that the media practically labeled as its own genre at the time, I believe, space rock. What was Roger McGuinn up to at this stage in his career?
Roger, the leader of the Byrds, which was arguably the greatest American band of the 60s, actually referred to as the American Beatles for a period. But Roger, the frontman, main songwriter, came up with a song in 1966 called Mr. Spaceman. This was on the same album as 8 Miles High. So there was a lot of discussion about what these songs meant. The media labeled Mr. Spaceman space rock, even though it was kind of a country folk little ditty. Anyway, the Byrds came to an end in 1973, and that was the same year that Roger launched a solo career and went out on tour and performed at Ebbets Field, Denver's premier club of the 1970s. It was actually located on the basement level of Brooks Towers in downtown Denver at 15th and Curtis. Tiny little room, but the folks at Listen Up captured a lot of these performances. We've got the version of Mr. Spaceman that Roger did that night. Didn't want that one lost to time, I guess, but it's kind of cute.
All right, here we go with Mr. Spaceman.
Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?
Wow, love Roger McGuinn. And we're just about out of time, but last month we started what I hope will be a tradition of having you pick a music clip to play us off. And before we get to that, I just wanted to throw a question out there that references the tag team song that we played earlier. What does it mean when a pop song becomes the driving music behind a commercial? Does that bestow some special status that it's really made it? Or is it, does it mean it's a sellout or some combination?
An unsavory combination, Kevin. I don't know. I chafe a bit at the word sellout. I think that's kind of a vestige of the old countercultural days when you were selling out to the man, if you would. Use your music for commercial purposes. It never existed. The Who was doing commercials for soda pop back in the 60s of their first 2 years of existence. It's just evolved over time, Kevin. Corporate gigs are maybe a more interesting thing to explore. When Bob Dylan is doing corporate gigs, right, where he gets paid $1 million to perform at their convention, you know, for anything. We'll have that discussion some other time. How much Pfizer paid Huey Lewis in the News to play I Want a Drug at their convention? But I'm getting off course here. I think it's ironic, actually, with corporate radio driving the bus on the airwaves, commercials and movie soundtracks to another degree are where you get exposed to music that you might not have heard otherwise. So many great things over the years. I'm just off the top of my head, Pink Moon by Nick Drake in a Volkswagen commercial. The song was lost to time. But these days, the tune that's running through my head is Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac. Such a sweet, great little tune by Christine McVie. She always was kind of third fiddle, if you will, to Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham in the group. But such a fantastic talent in her own right. And just to hear this song from the late 80s resurrected in a Chevrolet commercial, and it's perfect, right? And I can't get it out of my head.
Okay, here we go. We're gonna play a clip, so you won't be able to get it out of your head either, listeners. So here's Everywhere. Once again, G, thanks so much for joining us. It's been fun.
I do anything to support the Colorado Sun, Kevin. You guys keep journalism alive. That means a lot to me and a lot of other folks.
All right. Thanks so much.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A state board established by Governor Jared Polis is meeting this week to consider renaming Mount Evans, but the board is a bit in flux. The latest work begins without Patricia Limerick, who has special expertise in the fraught history of John Evans, the territorial governor blamed for the Sand Creek Massacre. She was appointed to the board by virtue of her work as a director of the Center of the American West at the University of Colorado. However, she lost the seat when she was removed as director in September. Also, the terms of six others expired in August, but they will remain on the board until they are reappointed or replaced by the governor. New laws are in motion to move the needle on Colorado's abysmal recycling rate of only 16%. And while they don't kick in until 2026, advocates and industry experts say key preparations are underway and a state council is being formed. The laws are supposed to give all Colorado residents equal access to recycling and help create an industry that produces goods from recycled materials. The nation's largest beverage companies have committed to including high percentages of recycled materials into their packaging, and they now need a steady and clean stream of glass, cardboard, and aluminum. Billionaire Phil Anschutz will get another chance to pursue an $8 million tax refund after the Colorado Court of Appeals reversed a lower court judge's dismissal of a lawsuit seeking the money from the state. Anschutz argues that changes to the federal tax code made through the Congress's 2020 COVID-19 response bill entitle him to the bigger refund dating back to 2018. The appellate court agreed that changes to the federal tax code should affect Colorado's tax code. The case could have big implications for government revenue in Colorado, as others could file for refunds if a ruling is eventually issued in Anschutz's favor. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for The Colorado Dream, Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of The Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.